Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
I'm like, let's settle down, Mom. I ran the Olympic standard. Doesn't mean I'm going, but like, yeah, I was still in shock and awe because I never really saw myself as like a Canadian record holder. I just couldn't believe that that is something that I had just done. And I still didn't see myself as that good. Like it was so weird. It was so surreal. So it took a long time to get used to like, oh yeah, it's the fastest any woman's run a 10K on the track. That was me. That's weird.
On this episode of The Rundown, I speak with one of Canada's best elite distance runners, Tasha Wodak. Hailing from BC, she studied in Arkansas on a running scholarship and eventually at Simon Fraser University. Find out how Tasha pushed through setbacks, overcame injuries, and found success later in her running career. Tasha is an Olympian and holds the national record in the 10,000 meter. She's off to an amazing start for 2019. Already winning 5 races. We can't wait to see what's next. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown? Running with WRG and still can't get enough? Sign up to their weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive run events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Just go to iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, the Vancouver Half Marathon on June 23rd proved to be Tasha Wodak's 5th win of 2019. Wodak crossed the line in 1 hour 11 minutes and 20 seconds, only a minute and 17 seconds off the course record. The elite distance runner had just won the Canadian 10K Championships in Ottawa. Clearly, Wodak's impressive performance has staying power. Given her stunning year, Wodak has been named to the upcoming World Championship squad as part of the 10,000 meter team in Doha, Qatar. Needless to say, Wodak is keeping her eye on the prize and is an important one to watch. In June, Julia Hurricane Hawkins ran the 50 meter and 100 meter dash races in the National Senior Games in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She's 103. She may just be the oldest woman to compete on an American track. If you ever felt it was too late to start something new, think again. Miss Hawkins started running late in life, adding it to a long list of passions, from daily walks to gardening and landscaping on her Louisiana property. Julia also has 4 children, 3 grandchildren, and 1 great-grandchild who keep her busy. 2 years ago, at the age of 101, she set a running record, completing the 100-meter dash in just 39.62 seconds. So what's her secret? Hawkins says, keep yourself in good shape if you can, have many passions, and look for magic moments. Be sure to keep your eye open for them. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run. I've had quite a few fast runners on the show so far. My next guest holds the 10,000 meter national record. We'll get into the time later, but I'd like to welcome to The Rundown, Tasha Wodak.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming down and all the way from BC, right? So
Vancouver, yeah, here in Ottawa.
For Ottawa Race Weekend, so mm-hmm. It's kind of a special weekend. You've been here before?
Yeah, I've been to Ottawa probably 8 or 9 times, but I think this is my sixth or seventh time doing this race.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And it's a great run city too, right? So I don't know if you get that feeling. It's one of the first half marathons I ever did, and it's kind of holds a nice place in my heart, and like everyone comes out and cheers.
It's a really awesome running community here, and along the course there's so much support and cheering going on, and it's really awesome. And what's great is that the 10K and the 5K are on Saturday night, so the marathoners that are in town are there cheering. And then the next day, on Sunday morning, we return the favor by being out there and cheering and supporting the marathon, which is really fun. So I like the way it's set up to be able to support each other.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's such a great run community too here. So you're going to actually race the 10K in a few hours.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
I'm good. I'm excited. I'm feeling healthy and recovered from my 10,000 on the track a few weeks ago. It took me a while to recover from that. So I'm happy to have healed, I guess. I was hobbling around for like 3 or 4 days.
Really?
So yeah, it was good. And it's a privilege to be here in Ottawa and race against some of Canada's fastest ladies. It's the most elite field that Manny, the elite coordinator, has put together. So I'm really excited to line up against them, and hopefully we can bring the best out of each other.
Awesome. Yeah, that's what it's all about, right? Competing mm-hmm. with the best and pushing yourself to limits. I'm just curious, Tasha, like, where did everything start for you? Like, what kind of childhood did you have? Were you athletic as a kid?
Yeah, I grew up playing sports since I can remember. Both my parents are athletic. My dad, huge soccer. He still referees. He's turning 70 next week, and he still referees soccer all the time and plays in the afternoons with his buddies. So I grew up running. I think I ran my first race when I was in grade 4, maybe. But before that, I did, you know, gymnastics, dancing. I tried baseball. I hated it. Soccer. I played soccer actually up until grade 12. So I was always really into soccer, basketball. I've tried it, volleyball, you name it, I've probably done it. So, but running, I remember doing my first race with my dad. I think I was in maybe grade 5, and it was a road race, and I loved it, and I got a medal, and I did really well. And I think then my mom tells me that, you know, she's like, I knew then that you were going to be good. So I joined a track team after that, and the rest is history.
And you grew up in BC then, and...
Yeah, I grew up in Surrey, a suburb of Vancouver, about 40 minutes outside the city. And yeah, I grew up, you know, my dad was a bus driver. My mom was a dental receptionist, and I had a great childhood. My brother played lots of sports too. And my parents drove me here, there, everywhere, came to all my tournaments. And, you know, Saturday would be my brother's soccer. Sunday was my soccer. And then every other weekend would be a track meet.
Okay. Yeah. And so that kind of like carried forward. And did that just stick? You just loved it, and running is what you decided you wanted to do at a very young age?
Yeah, you know, I remember more being more serious, I think, getting into high school, like grade 8. I remember the first day of you want to be on the track team, like at my high school. And I remember going right up to the coach and being like, my name's Natasha, and I want to make sure I'm in the junior girls race, not the grade 8 race. Like, I was already like eager, thinking I'm so good. And I mean, I never even won, a BC title when I was in high school, and I never made a national team, like a national junior team or anything, but I was always pretty good and I loved it. I loved competing, but I also played metro level soccer up until grade 12. So it wasn't until scholarship opportunities came about that I sort of made my choice between soccer and track and field.
Okay. And then it was track and field that you decided on.
Yeah.
Where did you go for that part of your career?
I went to University of Arkansas at Little Rock. Back in 1999. So this would be my 20-year high school reunion this year. I know. So
time flies.
I know, it's crazy. So I went to Arkansas, and I was a little naive. I didn't really know what I was getting myself into, and I was very, very homesick, and I had never just ran. I'd always been involved in soccer and basketball, and I had so much going on. So to go away to school and only run was really hard for me, and I was exhausted, and I got injured. You know, it was the first time I'd ever been injured, because I had never run more than 5 days in a week. So yeah, I was there for about a year and a half, and I went back from my fourth semester, and I decided within the first week that January that I just wanted to go home. I didn't want to be there anymore. I wasn't happy. I wasn't running well. And I just left and came back. And actually, I didn't want to run anymore. I wanted to quit. So I wasn't really running. I was just sort of like, you know, deciding what I wanted to do with my life, and decided that fall I was going to go to SFU, Simon Fraser University, to go to school. And in the summer, I started running a bit and contacted Britt Townsend, the head coach there, and said, you know, like, I'm interested in maybe running on the team if that's okay with you. And so I walked on to the Simon Fraser team and redshirted that year, and things went really well. And eventually I got full swing back into competing and got a scholarship there, and loved every minute of competing in the NAIA and being on the Simon Fraser team and going to school there, and got a great degree in criminology. So that was a really fun experience. But again, it wasn't, I never won an NAIA title. At that time, I had never made a national team. You know, I was always, you know, like, Natasha's a good runner, but it was never like, Natasha's going to go to the Olympics. Like, I never was sort of at that level. I never saw myself at that level, and I never really committed to being at that level. I was always kind of doing the work, but never, you know, I would skip runs, and I was never fully committed. And then after university, do you want me to keep going with this?
Sure. I'm just curious, like,
whole story.
When you, yeah, no, it's really great. We could pick up, but I just have something like, what, you know, when you hear it a lot, actually, that scenario where you go to school and then they're driving you to, okay, we're training. It's like so intense. And it becomes like there's like an emotional thing there too, where it's like, you're tired, you're not used to it, you're not running well. It's like a whole whirlwind. Like, how do you come out of that and then decide to come back into running again? Like, how do you find, was there a moment where you realized, like, I love, this is what I love to do, and you remembered it?
Yeah, you miss it. If you, like, I love to compete, and I missed competing. And so when I came home and took the time away, you miss it. And if it's really something you're passionate about, it'll come back to you. I strongly believe that. Otherwise, I wouldn't be where I am today, because there's been many times that I've walked away from the sport, or almost walked away from the sport, taken time off, and I keep coming back to it because it's my love, you know? And so I think that's what drew me back in, is I missed it. And I knew deep down inside I had more in me. I had more potential, and I needed to keep going.
Mm-hmm. So when you changed schools, did someone see that potential in you? Is that where you kind of started to believe a little bit more in yourself and see that potential?
Yeah, I think, you know, of course, my parents always knew. You know, my mom always tell me, we always knew you were so talented. And, you know, like, of course, like, Britt Townsend was, you know, a huge, she believed in me always. And but I think I was still lacking a bit of confidence in myself at that time. And I didn't really have, you know, there's all these girls in high school that were just super naturally talented, and they were like beating me. And I was like, well, it didn't seem at that time I had that extra something that they had. And so I never thought, oh, well, you can go to the Olympics or you can do these things. But I think that I had a natural ability. I needed to show it a little more love and a little more respect. And I grew into that. So
cool. So is there that moment where you can think back to where it was like a breakthrough, where, like, where Tasha?
I would say the breakthrough came much later. Like in university, I think the highest I did, I placed third at NAIA's. I think I placed maybe like 10th at national championships in cross country. I can't really recall, nothing spectacular that anyone would look back and remember. Mm-hmm. And so when I finished, I graduated in 2006. I know if you're doing math right now, you're thinking, you started university in 1999. That's like Van Wilder. That's like 7 years. So when I transferred to, I know it was a long time. When I transferred to Simon Fraser, I basically, like, all my Arkansas credits were seen as like zero credit. So I had to start over again at SFU. So that was like 2 years that were pretty much wasted. Anyways, I graduated in 2006 and was like, all right, time to like join the real world. And I want to go traveling. And so I stopped competing and was like, oh yeah, like that was a fun time of my life. And I'm just going to run for fitness. And, you know, every once in a while I would do the sun run and still run, I don't know, like 38 minutes or something. But yeah, I didn't train seriously for 3 years, I think, to 2006 to almost 2010, I would say.
Wow.
I think I started training again maybe in 2009. I moved near Simon Fraser and started training with the group again. And
do you like that group training?
I do. Yes. And so it was at that time when I started to, I had grown up a bit and I was more committed, and I immediately saw results. Within 2 months, I was running PBs, and I was like, oh, wait, like, wow, maybe I am good at this. Maybe I should give it another try. And it kind of, the rest is history. I just sort of, the better I did, the more committed I got. And the more committed I got, the better I got. So it was, and here I am now. I mean, that was almost 9 years ago, I think. And every year I've seemed to improve, so.
Confidence goes through the roof.
Yeah.
Start believing in yourself a little bit more.
Yeah. But I mean, if I had to think of a race, like a certain race that was pivotal, that was like, I can go to the Olympics, was when I ran in early January 2013. I went and ran a road race in Victoria, and I ran an 8K, and my PB had been 27:20, and I ran 25:27, and I went through 5K in 15:45, and I remember finishing, and there's a little video clip, I don't know if you guys can ever find it, but I'm actually, you can see me going, holy F-U-C-K, because I could not believe that I had just run that time, and I didn't really know what it meant in the next day. It wasn't until I got home when I went on social media and people were like, that's equivalent to like a 32 minute, you know, 32 and change 10K. And I was like, what? Like my PB was like 33:30 or something. And I was like, really? Like you can go to world champs and this is like really big deal. And I was like, wow, okay. And I just kept, that was the beginning of like, okay, like now you're on a different level and let's try to get world standard. Let's try to get Olympic standard and so on and so forth. So I don't know. People are like, "Where? How did that happen?" I'm like, well, I don't know. I just did. I just kept put my head down and trained a lot. And all of a sudden I had a big breakthrough. It just happens.
Was there a difference in the training that you were doing at that point? Or it was kind of like the same routine that you were always used to?
No, I think it was, I definitely had increased my mileage and was more focused than I had ever been throughout that fall and through the winter. And I will be honest. I had one thing, girls might not talk about a lot is I lost weight. And I don't think before I was heavy by any means or too heavy, but I did lose, I would say, I think it was like 7 pounds within about 6 months. And it wasn't something that I did like, I need to lose weight to run fast. It was just, it happened naturally with me paying more attention to like nutrition and like the intensity of my workouts was increasing. And so that, and I just leaned out and I think, you know, that's what happens. And that's how and I ended up running faster. And since then I've sort of maintained that same, you know, like my weight fluctuates, 3-4 pounds here or there, depending if I have a really big race. But, I think, I had leaned out and that was part of maybe just a little part of why there had been, people were like, well, it was so much faster. And I was like, I don't know, maybe that has something to do with it.
You're lighter. It's going to translate to, it's going to translate to some speed gains there a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wasn't like underweight or anything. Like I don't want to, it's always such a touchy topic
when girls
talk about like weight and too skinny. And we were having that conversation on our shakeout run this morning with the strong, not skinny hashtag. And Chris Balassini was like, it should be strong and skinny. Right. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to use that hashtag now.
Yeah, there's a big difference, and especially, it's a big issue, I guess, with when you're looking at people, especially through social media and stuff like that, you see that. But yeah, strong and lean and, fit.
I don't see myself necessarily as skinny. I see myself as like lean and strong. But if I went and told like one of my friends that doesn't run, oh, I don't think I'm skinny, she'd probably smack me upside the head. So, just do what you need to do to run fast. And if you're running hard and you're eating right, your body's going to be what it needs to be. And for some people that looks skinny or that's really thin, fine, that's fine. Or maybe it's not, maybe you look soft, but it doesn't matter. If you're running well and you're happy, then
that's all that matters.
You do you.
Exactly. So what distance were you focusing on at that point? Was it Was it the 8K, 10K range? Or
I think after that 8K, we decided to focus on the 10. Well, actually, funny is that we were going to try the steeplechase. And so I was training for the steeplechase as well.
Can you explain that? What that is?
I think at some point everyone says, oh, well, I can do the steeplechase. And anyway, so I started doing some hurdle drills and whatnot. And I ran one steeplechase, 10:26. I did. But then I like hit a hurdle in practice and it hurt. And I realized that I wasn't set up for the steeplechase. I didn't like doing the hurdle drills. I didn't enjoy it. I had anxiety about the water jumps. And I was like, well, why are you doing this if you're not liking it already? And you can't, if you're going to do the steeplechase, you're going to do the steeplechase. And I still wanted to do everything else. I'm like, well, I want to do the 10,000. I want to do half marathon champs. And it was like, you know, Britt was kind of like, we need to just sort of focus on one. So then I was like, okay, I'm going to just focus on like 5K, 10,000. I still loved the roads. I still wanted to do it all. Like, Britt would shake her head right now because I used to do races and not tell her. She would get so mad. Yeah, she's like, you ran a half marathon after the 10,000 champs like 3 days later and you didn't tell me. I'm like, well, I knew you'd say no.
Just because you like to do it and you wanted
to do it. Wanted to do it all. I mean, I think now, like, how silly. And I'm lucky I didn't get injured more, but you know, it's all part of the process. I learned my lessons and had fun.
So like then at that point, did you start to think like Olympics? Did you start to think like all these big goals? Or like, I always wonder like, where does that, like, you know, you're progressing as a runner, but then where do you realize like, okay, that's actually a possibility. Like where?
I think that was, after that 8K, I definitely thought, okay, wow. Like, this is a possibility. And then I went on to win the Pan Am Cross Country Cup. And I led it from start to finish. And then I got really sick. I actually had pneumonia and ended up going to World Cross. And I wasn't sure how I would do. And I still placed 24th. And I was like, wow, I mean, you're better now than you've ever been and you were sick. So I was like, I don't know what's going on. I need to keep riding this wave. Like, I didn't really understand. And I was, you know, I was also going through a divorce at the time. So it was a pretty stressful time in my life. And I just was like, okay, focus on the running. It will get you through. And so running then to me also became a way to make myself feel better and solve my problems. You just go for a run. And so I poured myself into running. And I think at that, things started to go a little rough that end of that spring. I was having a really hard time with my personal life, and I was thinking about moving, and I was like, I don't know where to go. I don't know where to live. Like, and I decided to move to Kitsilano, which was about an hour from where I was. And with this move, I thought, it's time to change coaches. I thought, maybe you should run a marathon. Why not try a marathon? And that's when I talked to Richard Lee, and he had just started up the BC Endurance Project, and it seemed to be a good fit, and it was a good fit. And off I moved to Kits, and, you know, Richard from the get-go was like, I think you can go to the Olympics. And, you know, it's always one thing to hear it from your parents and from your friends, but when you hear it from someone like a coach who don't know, you know, that was like, okay, like, this guy thinks he can coach me to get to the Olympics. So that was a big deal. And I always remember that. And I'm forever thankful for Richard. He's not coaching me anymore, but, you know, with him and all the training, we did get to the Olympics, you know? So I'm like, yeah, he was right. And he believed in me. He always believed in me. So. Mm.
And how long did it take? How long was that process from the time you met him to,
3 years. Okay. Yeah. You know, he coached me through my first marathon, and I ran a marathon that fall. And it was rough. I mean, I was still going through some really hard stuff in my personal life, and he helped me get to that start line. And that part of just getting to the start line of a marathon, as I'm sure you know, is, you know, accomplishment in itself. So finished my first marathon 2:35:11, and I was stoked with that. But people always ask me why I haven't run another marathon. That was 2013, because I didn't really enjoy the training. I, I don't like the grind, you know? I like going to the track and feeling fresh and hammering out a fast session. I mean, if I could be a 1500 meter runner, I would, but I settle for the 10. So the marathon, it was like, okay, we're going to do 8 by a mile, you know, like so slow. And I'm like, this sucks. So it was hard. And now I just like, I can't handle mileage, but yeah.
So you ran one marathon? In
one, yes.
Wow, 235.
Yeah.
BQ. Like strong.
Yeah, I guess. People always ask, have you run Boston?
Yeah.
Nope. One day I will run Boston. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you got to, like, it's...
Of course. It's, if you're a runner, it's got to be on that runner bucket list.
Yeah, exactly. Did my third one this year, and I'll be in New York in November, so...
Awesome.
Yeah.
Those are two that I would love to do, New York and Boston. Yeah,
they're special. So you got to the Olympics in which distance?
The 10,000.
10,000.
Yeah.
Which is the one you hold the...
Yes.
And so did that record happen before or after the Olympics?
So I can tell you about that night. That was probably one of the best nights of my life, is when I ran the Olympic standard and broke the Canadian record. It happened all on the same night. And so that was in 2015. And after 2013, after the marathon, things were going well. And then early 2014, I got plantar fasciitis, and it was a nasty case of plantar fasciitis. I took 6 weeks off. It did nothing. And if anyone out there has had plantar fasciitis, y'all know what I'm talking about. It is the worst, and nothing really helps. You think, oh, I'm going to wear that sock, or I'm going to roll my foot. Have you had it?
No, I haven't.
It's like there's no solution that's like, this is going to work. And so that was, I got it in January, and by August, nothing was working. So I got prolotherapy. And whether or not that worked, I don't know. It was kind of by the fall, I was able to run 5 days a week. It still hurt, but it was tolerable. And, you know, I was told by many people that have had it, you just got to run through it if you can. So I just kept running. And by January, I was back to normal mileage. It only hurt a little bit. But going into 2015, I was kind of like, well, I've had it. 2014 was really... not a lot of consistency, but from December, January, February, March, everything started to come together. And I ran a big PB in the half marathon, 111.30. And I was like, whoa, like, okay, like, I'm fit again, yay. And so going into the Peyton Jordan on May 2nd that year.
That is solid, 111. I'm sorry, I'm like, my best is 118, and that's like, wow.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that was in New York, and it was such a fun weekend. I'll never forget that weekend as long as I live. It was awesome.
New York half.
Yeah.
It's a fun race.
Yeah, it was so, so great. And I placed seventh, and I was like, whoa, like, I get money, too.
Oh, wow.
Because you don't go to, like, these, like, U.S. races when you're, you know, I don't go to expecting money. I expect to just try and get a fast time. So that was like a little cherry on the top. I mean, it wasn't much, but it was something.
Yeah.
And so after that, I was like, okay, like Richard's like, let's try and get the world championship standard at Peyton Jordan. Like it's 32 flat. It's going to be hard. I'd only run 33. I think I'd run 33.09, I want to say, on the track. And so I was like, okay, training's been going well. Like, we'll might as well go for it. And I ran the Sun Run 2 weeks before and ran 32.35. So I was like, oh.
In Vancouver.
Yeah, in Vancouver. I was like, okay, awesome. But I still didn't have, like, I thought if I ran under 32 minutes, it would be amazing. But I wasn't like, okay, I'll be crushed if I don't. I was like, it would be absolutely amazing. And then it was just a few days before Peyton Jordan that we found out the Olympic standard was 32.15. So I was like, okay, like, let's just A, goal 32 minutes, B, goal 32.15. Let's just go out there. I hadn't run many 10,000 on the track. I still didn't really know what to expect. And the Canadian record was 31.44. That wasn't even on my radar. I didn't even really know what it was until that day Lanny told me what it was. And I mean, you don't go thinking about getting a Canadian record if you haven't, you know, even been in that realm. Like I hadn't, it would be disrespectful to say, oh, I thought about getting it. No, because I wasn't even I hadn't even come close in years previous. So, you know, I lined up for the race, and it was one of those magical nights that people talk about, and it happened to me. You know, it was, conditions were perfect, pacing was perfect, my body felt perfect. Like, I can't think of a time during the race where I was like, oh, this is really hard. I remember with going through 8K, and me and Lanny were like, we've got this, because we had said, if we go through 8K in 25:30, we're going to hit world standard. And we went through in 25:30. It was kind of funny because we'd said that and we were side by side. So we actually said to each other, we've got this. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, I knew if I knew when, during the last lap, that I had got, you know, I'd got the standard. I needed to finish a strong last lap. Ran a strong last lap. I think it was like a 70. I was happy with it. And then Lanny was like, you got it. And I was like, so did you? Because I thought she was talking about the world standard. She's like, no, you got the Canadian record. And I was like, what? She's like, yeah, you ran whatever. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I had no idea. And I was like, just like, I had no, I was speechless. I couldn't believe it. And, you know, going over and seeing Richard, and, you know, he had like tears in his eyes. He was so happy and so proud. It was such a, it was a really special moment. And calling my mom, and she was bawling, like, just couldn't believe, you're going to the Olympics. We're going to the Olympics. And like, I'm like, let's settle down, mom. I ran the Olympic standard. Doesn't mean I'm going, but like, yeah, I was like, I was still in shock and awe, because I never really saw myself as like a Canadian record holder. I just couldn't believe that that is something that I had just done. And I still didn't see myself as that good. Like, I didn't, it was so weird. It was so surreal. So it took a long time to get used to, like, oh yeah, it's the fastest any woman's run a 10K on the track. That was me. That's weird.
What's that feel like? What does that feel like for you?
Can you very special. I mean, it's, I feel so lucky to do what I do, and to, be able to run that fast. I don't know. It's like, it's just, I feel lucky and special and fortunate. And I have a whole team of people that, you know, to have all these people that have supported me and believed in me is part of the reason why I was even able to do all those things. So it's just, it's really cool. It's really cool to be able to be, you know, really good at something you're passionate about. You know, like, you can be passionate about something and sometimes it just doesn't work out for you. So I'm really lucky that something I'm so passionate about has worked out so well for me.
And would you say that's your greatest accomplishment in running?
Probably. I mean, I guess it's different between, I guess, thinking about your greatest accomplishment, like, on paper, or, you know, thinking back to races that I'm most proud of, I think would be different. I have another race in mind where I think that was the best race I've ever ran in my life, like, mentally, physically, emotionally. I would have Commonwealth Games of last year as that race where I ran with the most confidence I've ever had, and like, was like, I'm going to win a freaking medal today. And I never doubted myself. And, you know, I came close, like a second and a half from the bronze, but I never gave up and I fought for it. And that was, you know, even at Peyton Jordan 2 weeks ago, there was times in the race where one girl went and she made a move and I thought, oh, you're not fit enough for that yet. And I need to stop doubting myself. We all do it, right? Like, you're not fit enough to make that move, stay here. And like, Commonwealth Games, I never did that for one moment. Like, the move was made, I'm like, you're going, you're staying here, you're getting this medal. And so that's, you know, it's so mental, and I want that all the time. And after that race, I was so physically and emotionally exhausted for literally a month, because it took so much out of me to be so in it and so fierce and so all in for so many months. And I mean, you can't do that all the time. It's just not possible. And so you can only save those, that much mental and physical exertion on the 10th, for, you know, the 10 on the track, like, I would say once a year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know if I had been like, so I'm going to run the Olympic standard at Peyton Jordan and was like, oh, I'm going all in. I don't know if I would have been able to recover from that and have a full season ahead. Of course, I gave it, like, you know, a huge effort and everything, but I think you can really only go into that, like, that well, that dark well.
that deep, dark well,
like, once a year. So I'll save that for Doha.
Yeah, there you go. Is that what's is that what you're looking forward to?
Yeah.
Okay. And is it, do you have like I have kind of two questions in mind, but we'll start with talk a lot about like some of the pitfalls and like mentally some of the struggles you've gone through throughout your career. Like, is that mental toughness, do you think it's like you have it? Is it something you have, or is it something that over time you kind of build that strength?
I definitely think it's over time you build that strength. I mean, you have to, in order to do the sport that we do and to be successful, you do have to have a natural grittiness and that toughness. But you do learn through races and through injuries and through life, you know, how to be strong, how to be mentally tough. And I've seen sports psychologists. They help with that, you know, these sorts of things. And so it has taken me a really long time to learn the mental game. And I've been through some pretty rough times where I wanted to quit and things have, you know, I'm like, okay, like you're in your 30s, you should probably be like having kids and stuff, but that's not what I wanted to do. I wasn't passionate about it. And I always came back to running because I'm so passionate about it. And I wasn't passionate about having kids. So I didn't, you know, you hear people like, oh, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. I'm like, no, this is what I want to be doing. So, yeah. And it got me through some of the hard times. But, you know, when you're injured and you've put, you know, you've decided you're going to do this running thing and then you get injured and then you're like, well, what am I doing? Now I'm just sitting on the couch and am I ever going to get back again? And am I just going to get injured again? Am I wasting my time? We all go through that and it's really, really hard. And I mean, 2016, I got a stress fracture in January and got healthy again. But I just was suffering from a lot of anxiety through my build to Rio. And it was something I'd never had before. It was like, I didn't know how to deal with, I wasn't sleeping. And at one point, I've talked about this on Instagram and through interviews, is at one point, a few months before Rio, I actually sat down with my friend and said, I don't want to go. This is too stressful. This is too much. I don't want this. And who says that when you're like 2 months out from going to the Olympics? But it was something I'd never experienced before, the anxiety, the pressure and everything. So fortunately, I had a great support team around me, a great family doctor, and his wife is a counselor. And I started working through things and had some great friends and things started to sort of get back on track. And you know, I went to the Olympics and it was a good experience and I ran well, but as soon as I got home, I got injured again. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And we didn't know what was wrong. And it was just incredibly frustrating. And I'm like, maybe now is the time to quit. You know, you're 35. You've gone to the Olympics. Mm. You've done what you need to do. Let's move forward. But something was still in me saying, there's more. You know, you're always, done. You're not done. But we couldn't figure out what was wrong with my foot. And this is like when I met my now current boyfriend, Alan, who is an orthopedic surgeon. And no, we didn't meet from my injury. We met on a blind date, before everyone thinks that. and he looked at my MRIs and was like, yeah, you've got severe arthritis in your right toe. That's what's causing all these problems in your right foot. You need surgery on your toe to fix the rest of the problems. So it was like, oh, okay. So you mean if we fix my toe, all of these other little things will go away? Because I mean, I had a stress reaction. It turned out I had a stress reaction in my foot. I had had a stress reaction in that foot already that year. I'd had peroneal tendonitis in that leg. That's where I had plantar fasciitis. It was just that leg was just, something was wrong. And I always had pain in my right toe, but I didn't know what was going on. So yeah, it was so bad that I had fractured off a piece of bone and it was floating around. So surgery was scheduled in December and I came back from it and I wasn't sure if I would be able to run well again. I didn't know how I'd recover from the surgery. And at that time is when I switched coaches. I don't like talking about the whole coaching thing too much because, you know, it's personal reasons and moving coaches is kind of like going through a breakup. It was really difficult. And, Richard is a fantastic coach. He just wasn't the right coach for me, if that makes sense, you know, and you break up with someone like that person's a great person. They just weren't the right person for me. Mm-hmm. And I think he would say the same thing. Natasha's a great athlete. She wasn't the right athlete for me. And so we parted ways in March, and I was like just coming back from my surgery. I already had world championship standard for London, and I was coachless in March. And I was just like, what are you doing? Again, like maybe we should just call it a day. Mm-hmm. And Alan had at that point had never seen me race. We met in September. He's like, oh, like, yeah, I think you should keep going, but we need to do it in a way that, you know, you love the sport, because if you're not loving it, why are you doing it? Enter Lynn Kanuka, who is the happiest person in the world. And we made a new plan. And this plan was, you know, if you're not healthy and you're not happy, we change it. And it was very refreshing to know that this was going to be our plan, and we were going to enjoy every bit of the process. It wasn't just going to be about the next race, because that was what was so stressful for me. Is I always was like, I'd finish a race and it was like, what's next? Time to get ready. And there was never time to really just enjoy the process and enjoy things along the way. I had lost that. And so we were ready to do it again. And she's like, and we're going to have to change your training, because you're not a spring chicken anymore. You don't recover the same. We need to more cross training and less. So she's all about the too much rule. So too much, too soon, too hard, you're going to get injured. And so we have really since then changed the way I train. And I mean, besides a minor calf strain 3 weeks ago, I've been healthy for 2.5 years. I've been running some of my best races of my life. And most importantly, I'm happy. And that was, I mean, amazing. And such a great way, you know, when I'm not happy or something's not going right, I immediately will talk to Lynn and she'll say, okay, let's take a few days off, or do we need to talk? Lynn, you know, she's more of a friend than a coach, and she's been through everything I've been through. You know, she's been through it all. You know, she's the Canadian record holder in the 1500 and the 10K on the road. I'm coming for your record tomorrow, Lynn. So I know when I'm feeling something that has to do with running, she knows exactly how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like after Commonwealth Games, I came home and I was so exhausted. And we were doing this one training session. I was doing drills and strides. And she came over to me. She's like, how are you doing? And I just burst into tears. And I'm like, I don't know what's wrong. I'm just so tired. And she started crying too. She's like, I know exactly how you feel. And it's really nice that to have, like, that your coach knows exactly how you feel. And so I trust, that gives a level of trust that I trust her. She says jump, I say how high. So, and that's a really great thing to have. And it's really hard to find in a coach-athlete relationship. Mm-hmm. And I feel very lucky and privileged and special and all those things to have that relationship with my coach.
I think that's really interesting what you're saying is, like, you know, coaching style comes into play a lot mm-hmm. of the time, especially when you're choosing one, but also like that there has to be a right fit for you.
And 100%.
And
yeah.
Like, you know, there's a right training program for everyone's body
mm-hmm.
and how we recover is different and mm-hmm. all these things. So there's so many factors that, you know, for someone that's just training by themselves or choosing online plans or anybody mm-hmm. just starting out doing stuff. Like, that's why coaches are so important, because they're there to listen to you and kind of like figure those things out for you, like fatigue and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So I guess you're saying like a lot of your injuries were coming from like overuse. Is that, or like
yeah.
the type of training that you guys were implementing?
I think, yeah, overuse. I was running about I would say 130K a week. And I ran well off that. It's not to say, it's just I was getting injured more and I don't think I was recovering well, so I didn't feel as good. And I didn't enjoy the training as much, and we weren't spending as much attention to, like, I wasn't paying as much attention as to how are you in your mental state, and we need to make sure that's right. So now I run about 95 to 100K a week with about 3 cross-training sessions on top of that. So, you know, most people listening, that's low mileage for a 10K half marathon runner for sure. But, you know, my hard sessions on the track are hard. And Lynn knows I like to do that. And so we need to recover on either end very well. So my off days are slow. If you follow me on Strava, like, it's very rare you'll see me run faster than a 4:30 kilometer on an easy day. Like, if I am in the trails, I'm probably 4:45, 5 minutes, easy day. I don't care. I just run as my body needs. And it's, you know, it's in this world of Strava and social media, you know, it's hard sometimes to be like, oh, well, my easy days aren't as good as so-and-so's. Does that mean I'm not as good or I'm not like as fit? Or now I'm just like, no, like let the results speak for themselves. Do what works for you. Find what works for you. And that's probably not what works for your friend. So.
Because easy days are supposed to be easy.
Yeah.
And recovery days.
Yes.
Like I learned that like 3 years ago or something when I was training for a triathlon. I was like, how do I get faster? And I was, the guys that were doing my like VO2 max assessment, they were like, you know, Tour de France guys. Yeah. They train some of the best athletes in the world. They're like, you got to run your long runs a lot slower or your easy runs a lot slower mm-hmm. to kind of recover and get that zone one, right?
Yes.
I used to go out and blast every run, like,
and it works for a while. Yeah. Like it does. It will work for a while, but it's not sustainable. And, you know, now also part of my training is I take a day off every week, which a lot of runners will do more, which is fine. You should take a day off when you feel that you need it. But sometimes it's hard to recognize that. And a lot of people, oh, I don't want to lose fitness or whatever. And it's like, your body needs a chance to absorb all of the work it's done. And so we call it Freedom Friday. So every Friday, unless I have a race, because then I'll just do like 20 minutes. But every Friday, if I'm back home, I volunteer at the cat shelter and then I go to yoga and that's it. And I love it. At first I was like, I should be like pool running outside or something, right? Like, shh, don't tell Lynn, I'm going to go pool running. And then I was just like, no, take the day off. And you know, it was like the first little while with her training, I was so nervous, is this going to work? And then I ran really well at World Champs in London. You know, I placed 16th and it was one of my best races. I'm like, it works. She's like, I know, you know, because she's not getting me to do anything different than she did. And like, she is a legend in Canadian distance running. And so I'm like, well, if it worked for you. So, and I think also what's important too about having that day off is the mental break. Is just like, yeah, I don't have to run today. I don't have to do anything I don't want to do. I just go in yoga and stretch. Mm-hmm. And yoga is good too because you take the time to think of nothing. You meditate, you cleanse. And it's so, I just, that's been great for me. And, you know, so I'm all about the rest days.
Right, me too. We have the same rest day too. So that's
Friday.
That's a Friday. Freedom Friday.
Yes.
I'm going to start calling that too.
Yeah, hashtag Freedom Friday.
And yeah, no, that's a great thing. And what does the cross training side of it look like? Like, is it weights? Is it, what do you do in there?
So Mondays and Wednesdays, I pool run in the morning on Mondays and then I run in the afternoon. And on Wednesdays, I elliptical. And then depending on how the week's going, I may do a secondary pool run after a hard session or whatever. So it's 2 to 3 days, usually three, I'll have three. But my runs, like Wednesday used to be like a medium long run. So it'd be more like 80 minutes. And now it's like 50 minutes. And I'm always like, Lynn, like, can I run a little bit longer? And she's like, you don't need to run any longer. You don't. And I'm like, are you sure? She's like, 55. But no, like you really don't. And I'm like, I still push to run longer on the Wednesdays. And sometimes I'll run an hour. And, but no, she's like, no, you really don't need to. Like, it's not going to make a difference if you run 60 versus 50. Like, so it's taking me I still have a hard time with this low mileage because I still see everyone else running more than me and think, oh, you should be doing that. But I'm just like, trust what you're doing is working and you're feeling good and you're healthy. So stop trying to push the envelope.
Mm-hmm. Trust the coach, trust the process.
Yes. And I've been doing that, but you know, you can't help yourself. You know, social media is out there and
yeah,
and this and that. And I'm always thinking, wow, would I be even better if I did this? No, you'd probably be injured, Natasha. That's what I keep telling myself. So,
or just say that.
Yes.
keep you going on this path.
Yeah.
I saw that, am I mistaken by saying you did some training away from home recently?
I went to Flagstaff.
Okay.
Yeah, for 4 weeks. It was awesome. I had so much fun.
How was that?
It was great. You know, I hadn't done altitude training since 2016. And so I was nervous about going back and just running for 4 weeks. I was like, you're going to do too much because at home I'm busy. I'm doing everything in normal life. And so I was a little nervous I was going to do too much while I was there. And I mean, I think I did end up doing too much because it was the first time I had been injured in a really long time. So But luckily, my boyfriend came to visit for that weekend when I got injured, and he was like, okay, like, probably take it easy. And then my coach called me. She's like, stop! Stop now! She read my log because I had been like, my calf is really tight, and went for another run and it still hurts, and went for another run and still hurts. She called, stop running now! Like, calf strength, 3 days, no running. And I like burst into tears. I'm like, what do you mean? I was only 2 weeks out from Peyton Jordan. And she's like, I had to miss my two key workouts. And she was like, it's fine. Cross train your ass off and you'll be fine. Mm. She's like, I'm the cross training queen. So take it from me. Mm. Which is true. She set the Canadian record in the 3,000 3 weeks out of the pool after she'd had a stress fracture. So she does. So when I'm cross training, like those 3 days, I was working my butt off in the pool and on the elliptical. But you know, Flagstaff itself was, it's such a wonderful running community there. And there were so many people to run with. And I was staying at Matt Yano's house. He is an American marathoner. I think he's run 210, I believe, in a 62 half marathon. And
I love how they do that with the half marathon. They call it 62, 64. So that's yeah. An Olympic.
He's incredibly talented, and he was so gracious having me there and showing me all the different places to run. And I know his easy runs are not my pace. So I am thankful that he went slow enough for me. Like, and he took me on all these runs, and, you know, he lives with his fabulous boyfriend, Brennan, and they were just so wonderful and accommodating, and their roommate, Jason, and their two dogs. And I loved it there. I didn't want to leave near the end. It just was like a second home. It was great. And like the trails there, and I was having a blast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's awesome there. Yeah. Apparently, I want to go and try and train in altitude and see mm-hmm. that whole experience.
I mean, the training itself was hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I was not expecting it to be as hard as it was. I think I was a little naive to think that I could hit close to the same times. And I did my first track workout, and it was a shock to the system, and my times were so much slower, and I was almost in tears on the track. I'm like, this sucks. Mm-hmm. And Athletics Canada was there, and some of the coaches were there, and they were like, no, you're doing good. Like, don't worry about it. And Trent Stellingworth always says, it's sea level effort, not sea level pace. So that is what I went for the rest of the time I was there.
Mm-hmm. Check your ego kind of thing.
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't look at the watch. Just
nope.
Go.
Effort. It's all about effort.
That's
yeah.
it. After everything you've done, like all the accolades and stuff, like, do you feel like a responsibility to other Canadian athletes, people that look up to you? Like, is that something that comes to mind? Like, is it a pressure for you? Like going to the Olympics and stuff like that, was that?
I don't think it's a pressure at all. I feel like it's a privilege that, you know, women and young women look up to me and will send me messages on Instagram about advice and all this stuff. And I think it's awesome, and I usually respond I would say 99% of the time I respond, unless I'm like doing something, then I forget to respond after. But mm-hmm. if you do message me, people, I will get back to you. And like I said, it's a privilege to be able to be in a position to give people advice and that they look up to me. And I think it's really awesome. And I hope that I can, you know, inspire some young girls to never give up on their dreams, because you know, I got beat all the time in high school. I got beat all the time in college. And like now I'm, you know, 14-time national team member and Canadian record holder. So, you know, never give up. I always tell that to these young girls, never give up on your dreams. Like no matter what it is, if you're passionate about it, if you're really passionate about it, work hard and it'll happen.
For you and not for somebody on social media or anything like that, right? Like do it for your own reasons.
And of course, yeah. Social media is not real life. I tell people that all the time, you know, like I try to keep it as real as I can, especially on my like Instagram stories. Like if I've had a bad run, sometimes you'll see me talk about that or whatever. But again, like you're seeing all the pictures of me in usually like good races, and I'm posting usually my good running pictures and not like, you know, when I'm on the side of the track crying because I had a bad race. Like, you know, it's easier to share the good stuff than it is the bad stuff. But I have had many hard moments, but you don't want to share that with the whole world. Also, it's personal.
Yeah, exactly.
So I since then created a personal account that's, you know, more for family and friends. So
exactly. And that's how we connected too. So I was like super happy that you were able to get back to me and willing to take the time to sit down today. Who do you look up to? Like who motivates you and inspires you?
Well, that's easy. Lynn. Yeah. I mean, she's been my number one idol since I was a little girl. I've always known her. She is actually the cousin of my high school coach.
Wow.
And so I remember meeting her when I was in high school and being like, oh, she's so amazing. And so actually when she started coaching me, she didn't start as my coach. She started as a friend. I reached out to her as a mentor and said, Lynn, you know, like, I'm looking for a coach. I'm looking for a team. What do you think? Where should I go? What should I do? And she said, I'm happy to guide you, because she wasn't really coaching many high performance athletes. She's so busy. And so she was like, I don't know if it'll work, but let's see. And then she says, we're kindred spirits. It just worked. We're just like, yeah. And so I look up to her in so many ways, and she had such an incredible career with her running and still continues to, you know, be involved in the sport and is so positive and happy. And she is everything a lady runner should be and should aspire to be. So, and of course, Shalane Flanagan. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, yeah. She's amazing. And, you know, when she won New York, it was like, you know, I'm going to go out there and I don't care that I'm an American white girl. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to run with the Africans and I'm going to beat the Africans. And that's inspiring, you know, because if you look at the stats, you know, I think it's like in the top 100 marathons in the world, I think it's like 80 something are held by Africans. So that's, you know, like, it's intimidating. It's very intimidating. And so I think she was like, no, like, you know, you don't have to be from Kenya or Ethiopia to win a big marathon or to run fast. So that was very inspiring, I think.
Yeah, that was huge.
For many, many people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. Even like last year in Boston, you know, Des Linden that mm-hmm. won, and, mm-hmm. You know, Krista Duchesne coming in third. I mean, that's mm-hmm. like, we're built for that in this country, you know, like yeah. those types of conditions, you know. And then,
yeah, as the rain is starting to fall now, I'm like, ha.
Yeah, you can kind of.
The Vancouver girl is very happy with the rain tonight.
You can handle that. Looking back on everything you know now, like, what would you tell a 20-year-old version of yourself?
Be patient. You know, you want it all now, but it's just going to be just as good in 15 years. Mm-hmm. One day at a time, and really enjoy the process. Enjoy what you're doing literally one day at a time. And if you're not loving it, don't do it. Like, if, you know, for a long period of time, if you're like, really, I don't like this, I don't like this, I don't like this, then you shouldn't do it. Like, life is too short to be forced to do something you're not really that passionate about. And like, I feel like a lot of talented runners don't like it and they're forcing themselves to do it. And then they end up just sort of, I don't know, fizzling out, I guess. And you can't force, even if someone's talented, you can't force them to do something that they don't like, you know? Mm-hmm. So, if you don't love it, don't let someone tell you you should do it anyways, and find something that you're really passionate about. Cause I think, you know, young girls might have a really good race, and maybe it's, you know, they want to play soccer or they want to go dance or whatever. And they might be pressured by people to, no, you should run and like give up everything else. And, you know, don't go to the movies and don't do this. Just run. But you need to make sure that it's something you're doing for yourself mm-hmm. and that you really love it. And if you need to take time off, I can tell you right now, I came back from 3 years time off. So can you, that's like, take the time off, take it, enjoy life. And you can always come back to running. Like, I'm 37 and I'm running better than I ever have. So there's no rush.
It's that experience that you have now, you know, that, that wealth of knowledge and racing and all that stuff that mm-hmm. kind of pushes you forward. Any specific diet that you're on, or like, what do you like to eat before a race?
Oh, it's so funny you say that, because
you're hungry.
We were just at the lunchroom, and they have, it's called fiery chili. Was one of the options.
Isn't that a big no?
we were live. If you follow me on Instagram, I put on my Insta story.
I do, yeah.
It was like, really? Who on earth is going to choose the fiery chili before a race? Nobody. So yeah, but I mean, generally before a race, you keep it simple, you know, things that you know. So toast, peanut butter, banana. I'll definitely have a Clif bar. That's my go-to energy bar. I know that I can have it 2 hours before a race and all will be good. Coffee, of course. I'll have a coffee or maybe a caffeine pill. See, we'll see. Not both, one or the other. I do want to sleep. I do want to sleep at some time tonight.
Wide awake at 12. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, oatmeal is usually a runner's go-to. It's not my favorite. And I eat a lot of Greek yogurt, berries, granola. But I definitely indulge when I want to. I love wine. So I don't deprive myself of a glass of wine. I have probably wine like two or three times a week. I used to go out a lot more like after a race. Like that's kind of what the runners do these days. I feel like it's like you have a big race, then you go out and have beers and like drink. But I don't want to drink more than like two glasses of wine pretty much ever because I feel shitty the next day and I don't want to feel shitty the next day anymore. I'm too old for that. So, and it's really hard on your body. Now I've learned that. So, you know, so everything in moderation. So I definitely say that with alcohol as well. Like people see me drinking wine on Instagram. So I want people to know like, yes, I drink wine, but it's definitely in moderation. And, and chocolate, nice. Ice cream, love it all, you know, but like I said, everything in moderation.
The alcohol is a funny one, right? Cause like people are like, oh, you know, race coming up.
Yeah.
Like, but like my coaches, like they told me they had their best race in Chicago once and they polished off a bottle like right the night before it. And I do it now, like, not a bottle, but I have like a glass of beer or wine and helps me relax. And
yeah, I used to quite often have a small glass of red wine the night before a race because it does just that little bit. Okay, I feel a little relaxed if I'm really nervous. I'm not superstitious, so I'm not like must have that glass of wine the night before because now it's routine. Must wear same socks, must wear, you know, I'm over all that. I used to be like, oh, you wore that ring when you ran really well in that race, you should make sure you wear that ring again because it's lucky. Like, no, I stopped doing that because it's stupid. And it never works. So everybody knows I don't think it works. So, I mean, some people have dietary restrictions and they can't eat this and they can't eat that. That's understandable, but everything in moderation.
So what's the big goal now? Do you have something you have your eyes on, like that you want to go for? Is it another record, your own record? Do you want to beat that? Or?
Yes, I definitely want to. I want to get the Olympic standard in the 10,000 on the track, or come very close to it, which would definitely be a Canadian record because it's 31:25. So I'm not sure if we will go for that this spring. I don't think we will. It'll be likely next spring. Or in Doha. The stadium is air-conditioned in Qatar.
Very nice.
So I don't really have to worry so much about the heat. So hopefully it'll be a good race. And I would love, again, to finish in the top 16, run well there and run like I did at Commonwealth, leave nothing out there. And long-term goals, I will run another marathon.
Yes. We need to get you out there.
I will. I said after Tokyo. After Tokyo 2020, I will definitely have unfinished business. I feel like that 2:35 was just sort of getting going. So I would love to run a good marathon and run some of the big ones, Berlin, Boston, New York,
the majors,
London.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what my 40s are for.
Yeah. It's cool that you kind of take that approach. It's like, it's cool. Like you've taken a step away from running, which is cool, but you've also taken a step away from certain distances, which you hear a lot of people say, like, sometimes when you go and do the marathon, taking a step back and getting faster at like, let's say a 10K or 5Ks or something, get that speed. And then going back is like a nice way to go about it, you know? So I've been told, so maybe I should take a step back from the marathon too. what does running mean to you?
Well, wow. How can I say that in one sentence? I don't know. Running is, you know, my life. Basically, it has shaped who I am as a person and has created so many opportunities and some of the best memories of my life are running. Some of my greatest friends are from running. It has taken me to some of the best places in the world. It has brought my parents immense pride. They're so proud of me, and that brings me so much joy that my running has brought them joy simply by, and they travel with me to all these great places, and that's really cool. It's really cool that my family's been able to come with me to some of these places, and that my running has brought happiness to them. And some of the happiest times in my life have been through running. And it's incredible. And some of the hardest times of my life have been through running. I've learned so much through running about how to deal with disappointment and how to be tough. And, you know, really, like I said, the person I am today in every respect is because of running and everything I've learned through my career in running. So thank you, running.
Yeah, it's a special gift that we have. And
very much so. It's like I said, it is a privilege to do what I do, to call running my job. And it is amazing. And I'm very thankful.
And you do that full, like your yes. full-time. Yeah, it's like.
You don't do it for the money, let me tell you that.
Let's say that that's like such a dream. So who's supporting you in all that, in your goals? And
well, I have karting from Athletics Canada, which is a huge help. And then, of course, like prize money through races. So I'm on the road quite a bit trying to get in that extra income. But otherwise, like through my sponsorships, I don't really make a lot of money. So I don't make a lot of money, but I'm good. I'm settled. And I'm extremely fortunate that I live with my boyfriend who has a great job and is able to sort of, you know, I help me out a bit with like, you know, if I go to Flagstaff for 5 weeks, I don't have to worry about like, oh, well, how am I going to pay two rents? Mm-hmm. You know, like that's a huge thing. And before when I would have to worry about that kind of stuff, when you go on these training camps, the reality is if you're renting a place, well, you have to rent another place and that's a lot of money and things like that. So, it's very nice that he's been extremely supportive of my running career and, has helped me out a lot in that way and helping make my dreams a reality.
That's great. Yeah. And we look forward to watching what you have, what you're going to be doing next and following you. And where can people find out more about you?
Well, I have a website, natashawodak.com. I'm on Instagram, Tasha Wodak, Twitter, Tasha Wodak. I'm on Strava, Natasha Wodak. So I'm all over the social media. My Facebook is private, y'all. Sorry. So
that's okay.
Yeah. They but everything else, I'm all out there. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me today. I know you're racing this afternoon, which is crazy, but I feel privileged to be able to sit with one of the best runners in the country and really, again, like looking forward to seeing what you're getting up to next. So good luck with everything. And thanks again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have a good one.
You too.
This episode is brought to you by WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. Whatever your experience, age, or identity, you're welcome to join us at the base of Mount Royal every Monday at 7 p.m. Just look for the group of smiling faces next to the monument. Some run fast, some run slow. Who you'll meet, you never know. If you want to learn more, visit their website, iamarunner.ca, and check their Instagram, at WRGRuns. Hope to see you out there. Thank you for joining us on this episode of La Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram, at La Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it. La Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi. And hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.